Kindred spirits of the Spooky Art Appreciation Tribe. I'm Suzanne.
And this is my daughter, Emily.
I'm an illustrator, and Emily is a classically trained fine artist. And we love spooky stories from the art world.
In this episode, we find ourselves on the trail of the French Blue once more, this time seemingly in disguise, in a new shape and place in the United Kingdom. But as the gem leaves royalty behind, it enters into the midst of people with the serious coin to buy the best of the best jewelry. This is the last of our three episodes about the Hope Diamond, so let's take a look at the final journeys of this spectacular gem.
Have you seen the well-to-do up on Lenox Avenue on that famous thoroughfare with their noses in the air, high hats and colored collars, white bats and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time?
MythEncyclopedia.com shares Sinbad's tale about the Valley of the Diamonds. The second voyage took Sinbad to a desert island, where he discovered an enormous egg belonging to a giant bird called a roc. When the bird appeared, Sinbad grabbed its claw and was carried away to the Valley of Diamonds. Eventually rescued by merchants, he returned to Baghdad, laden with diamonds.
We'll also be finding out how the diamond came to be known as the Hope Diamond, the people who owned and wore the diamond, and even about the postman who delivered the Hope Diamond to the Smithsonian Institution, and how the curse may have affected him. The sparkling diamond is still on display today, holding on to its glittering secrets. Thanks for joining us. We're glad that you're still with us and listening to episode 3 of 3 about the Hope Diamond.
Welcome to the Whispering Gallery. Be sure to turn on all of the lights, cozy up, and hang tight as things get a little weirder, a little darker, and a lot spookier. Here's a reading from Diamond Jewelry Advisor Coloi Poupon Dumontet. Again, please excuse any mispronunciations. No disrespect is meant to anybody or anything. There is a notable mention in American literature in Scott Fitzgerald's novella, The Diamond as Big as the Ritz. It is about a rich family in Washington who have a diamond so big that if it was cut up into lots of small diamonds, they would flood the world market and cause the price of diamonds to collapse. The novella describes how the family does everything to keep the existence of the diamond secret, become corrupted, and ultimately fall as a result of fear for its assets and social status. A didactic play based on the proverb, "Pride comes before a fall." We'll have all of our references listed on the blog post.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem sits, putting on the Ritz. Spangled gowns upon a bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits, putting on the Ritz.
Gems bedeck innumerable stories from Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, alchemy, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, to The Black Opal, one of the romance novels from the 80s.
Did you?
I don't think I did. I read a lot of your novels, but I don't think I read that one. Was that a Phyllis Whitney?
I think it might have been Victoria Holt.
Okay.
Kind of the pre-racy romance writers before things got a little too
steamy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Anyway, it was about opals in Australia.
That's where each and every Lulu Bell goes. Every Thursday evening with her swell bows, rubbing elbows, come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the Ritz.
So beneficial divine power was also the symbolism of gemstones such as the diamond, which in Indian tradition was said to form the throne of Buddha. Among precious stones, its purity symbolism is matched only by the diamond, which in India is equated with the philosopher's stone of alchemy, and which has become a Western metaphor for shining probity?
The quality of having strong moral principles, honesty, and decency.
Probity.
That was from a Google Dictionary result.
All right, so for shining probity, and that's from 1001 Symbols, an Illustrated Guide to Imagery and Its Meaning by Jack Tressider.
First things first, we've waded through some hardcore history of French royalty, so let's take a breather and find out how the story of the curse got started with a timeline. In 1642, a large blue diamond was found in India. Tavernier took a journey to Golconda, India, where it was said a statue had diamonds for eyes, and he heard about a tale of someone who stole from a statue and was punished. This was a 115-carat dark blue diamond. On this point of the statue with diamonds for eyes, it totally reminds me of Indiana Jones movies, but I don't know. Some of the tales said that Tavernier purchased the diamond, that the diamonds went from the diamond mine to a government official who was basically making sure the best of the best could go to the ruler. Through this person, he had purchased the diamond. As far as it being stolen from India, that's another story. So I don't know. It could have been totally above board. Next, in 1673, Louis XIV has the diamond cut into almost half. The diamond had 63 new facets, shrinking the diamond to 69 carats.
Only 69 carats.
Just teeny, yeah. 1789, Louis and Marie Antoinette, that whole time period of the French Revolution and the French blue being stolen, which was in 1792.
And could it have been the curse that Marie Antoinette and Louis died on the guillotine?
Then we have George IV with the diamond. You see it in a painting by Sir Thomas Lawrence in 1822 of King George. He's wearing the Order of the Fleece piece of jewelry. Check out our post to Instagram on June 20th to see the portrait. Now, something that's a little, you know, maybe it was a different time is why this was a thing. The portrait was a makeup gift for his mistress. I don't know if you're ticked off at your boyfriend, spouse, whoever, and they get a picture painted of themselves to make up with you?
Yeah, that seems a little cheesy. I don't know if I would necessarily accept that as a, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like, okay, maybe A for effort. It, you know, probably stiff and sore from sitting too long, but it's like, really?
Yeah, that seems a little much. So then we move on to the timeline of the Hope Diamond, as it's known as the Hope Diamond. When 1839, it was first listed by Henry Philip Hope. The blue diamond appears in his collection of pearls and precious stones as number one. These gems were considered specimens by Henry. This collection was kept in a mahogany cabinet, and Henry Philip Hope hired gemologist Bram Hertz to compile a catalog of his collection that was published in 1839. Hertz's description of number one is a most magnificent and rare brilliant of deep sapphire blue, of the greatest purity and most beautiful cut. It is of true proportions, not too thick.
We have puppies in the studio on both sides, so you may occasionally hear from the dogs. So we're sorry, we're trying to keep that minimal.
So it is of true proportions, not too thick, nor too spread. This matchless gem combines the beautiful color of the sapphire with the prismatic fire and brilliancy of the diamond, and on account of its extraordinary color, great size, and other fine qualities, it certainly may be called unique. It also had a weight of 177 grains, or 44 and a fourth carats. He may have purposefully avoided talking about the French blue to keep questions of legitimacy of ownership at bay. The diamond was then mounted on a medallion and surrounded by other diamonds. Three brothers, who were Henry Philip Hope's nephews, disputed the gem collection: Henry, Adrian, and Alexander. One author noted that Henry and Adrian were so intent on keeping the jewels out of Alexander's clutches that they even suggested selling the lot and using the money to found some institution for the benefit of mankind.
The London Blue Diamond in 1851 goes on to display at the Great Exhibition in London. It was suggested that it might be a recut version of the French Blue. Later in 2005, a computer showed the Hope Diamond fit inside the French Blue. In 1877, Precious Stones and Gems, Streeter asserts that the French blue was reduced into two fragments, the large one being the Hope, the smaller one being the Brunswick blue. In 1902, to pay his debts, Henry Thomas Hope sells the diamond to Simon Frankel, a New York jeweler, for $148,000. The Hope diamond remains in the safe of Joseph Frankel & Sons for 6 years. In 1908, a Turkish sultan, Abdul Hamid II, purchases the Hope diamond. And in 1909, the sultan puts the diamond up for sale. It is sold to Pierre Cartier, a jeweler. He's not just any jeweler. They're very famous in London, New York, and Paris.
I have some colored collars, white bats, and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem sits, putting on the Ritz.
In 1911, Cartier buys the Hope diamond, and in 1912, Cartier tells a story or legend of the cursed diamond and sells the Hope diamond to Evelyn Walsh McLean, purchased by her husband, Edward, the heir to the Washington Post, for $189,000. Sometimes at her parties that were grand and fun, Mike, her Great Dane, would wear the Hope diamond.
That's such an extravagant, like, rich person thing to do, but I totally love it. It's great.
Yeah, it's really cute. We posted a picture of the recreation by the Smithsonian's movie, Mystery of the Hope Diamond, on our Instagram account if you want to see what that would have looked like. It was pretty cute. The McLean's first son died in a car accident. Her husband ran off with another woman, and he died in a sanitarium. The Washington Post went bankrupt, and Evelyn's daughter died of a drug overdose, and a grandson died in Vietnam. She didn't agree that this had anything to do with the diamond's curse. Wikipedia states McLean was a victim of Gaston Means, a former BOI, Bureau of Investigation, FBI agent, murder suspect, and a grifter who claimed he had set a deal to free the Lindbergh baby for a ransom of over $100,000, which Evelyn McLean advanced him. Means disappeared with the money, only to resurface months later in California and ask her for more money. Suspicious of his activities, she helped lead police to him, and he was wanted for other crimes and civil actions, and this ultimately led to his conviction and imprisonment on larceny charges.
All right, and we do have a short aside from Wikipedia about this. So, following the Lindbergh kidnapping of 1932, Means attempted the most audacious con job of his career. Means was contacted by the Washington socialite Evelyn Walsh McLean, owner of the Hope Diamond, who asked him to use his connections in the East Coast underworld to assist in the recovery of the Lindbergh child. Means declared that he knew the whereabouts of the victim, and he offered his services as a go-between and asked for $100,000 to pass on to the kidnappers. This credulous McLean sent Means the money, and Means promptly disappeared, while a Confederate kept McLean's appraised of Means' difficulties and the fabulous chase. Means later came to McLean at her home again and said he would need an additional $4,000 to pay the expenses of the kidnappers. She had a $6,000 check cashed at one of the banks in Washington and turned $4,000 over to him. Finally, Means met McLean in a southern resort, promising to deliver the baby. Instead, he showed up with a man he introduced as the King of Kidnappers, who told her how and when the baby would be delivered. Everyone was given a code, and Means was number 27, the King was number 19. Norman Tweed Whitaker was the Fox, and McLean was number 11. And the baby was the Book. The missing baby, who was later found murdered, did not show up, and the next thing that McLean heard from Means was a demand for another $35,000. Failing to raise it, the heiress demanded all the money back. Means agreed, hurried to get it, and didn't come back. Confronted about his duplicity, Means expressed astonishment. "Didn't Mrs. McLean get it?" he asked. "She must have it. Her messenger met me at the bridge outside of Alexandria as I was returning to Washington. He said, I am number 11. So what was I to do? I gave him the money." This time, the heiress called the police. Means was captured, found guilty of grand larceny, and sentenced to serve 15 years in a federal penitentiary, but the money was never recovered. Means was assigned, transported, and imprisoned at the United States Penitentiary at Leavenworth, Kansas, where he died in custody in 1938.
That's a really sad story about the baby.
It's pretty infamous in the true crime community, too. Just that case of kidnapping was one of the first of, like, such a large scale and demanding so much money for the ransom. It's pretty iconic in the true crime world, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking that it would be about that poor baby. Okay, on to a brighter note. We were wondering, did Evelyn really let her grandchildren play with the Hope Diamond and the Star of the East?
We received a comment from one of Evelyn's great-grandsons on Instagram, and his website had a little bit for us to see there about this particular myth or legend, I guess.
So Evelyn's great-grandson, Joseph, raised in Louisville, Kentucky and Palm Beach, Florida, never met his colorful great-grandmother, but says his mother remembers bits. Mother teethed on the Hope Diamond and played with it in her sandbox, says Joseph with a smile, thumbing through a family scrapbook, one photo featuring Evelyn in a black patent leather dress with the necklace in full view. My mother wants us to know our great-grandmother as a caring philanthropist. The source of this quote was from the Tennessee Living People and Places by Carol Ann Griffith Roberts. That was kind of fun to hear from him on Instagram. He made a comment on our watercolor piece that's up there. In 1947, the diamond was sold after tragedies have affected the McLean family. In 1949, Harry Winston, a jeweler, purchases the Hope Diamond. In 1958, Winston chose to donate the diamond to the Smithsonian Institution, and James G. Todd was the letter carrier who delivered the diamond to the Smithsonian after it was donated by Mr. Winston. Shortly after he finished the delivery, as mentioned earlier, he crashed his truck and shattered his leg. He was then involved in another crash in which his head was injured. If those two accidents weren't enough, his house burned down, and he is believed to be the final victim of the Hope Diamond curse. At the Smithsonian, they've tested the diamond, and if you go to their website, you can see the diamond glowing red. In the Smithsonian Insider, it says, it's got an article called Bombarded with Ultraviolet Light, the Blue Hope Diamond Glows Red. This was in Earth Science Research News, Science and Nature, on August 19th of 2009. This is when they tried an experiment. And quoting, Post was investigating a phenomenon that the millions of museum visitors who gaze at the diamond on its rotating pedestal behind bulletproof glass will never see. The mysterious red phosphorescent glow the stone emits when exposed to ultraviolet light. The Hope Diamond's red glow has long been considered a unique property of that stone. Most blue diamonds produce a bluish-white phosphorescence if exposed to ultraviolet light. The few other diamonds known to emit red phosphorescence were commonly assumed to have been from the even larger original stone from which the Hope was cut. It is something that has always intrigued people, says Post, curator of the Smithsonian's National Gem and Mineral Collection. For people who like the whole idea of a curse and that kind of story, the fact that this thing phosphoresces a bloody red color is just too good to be true.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that it's a unique property to the diamond, and that all of the other gems that do it are most likely pieces of the original diamond. That's pretty cool that, like, something was unique in the formation of this diamond to cause it to do that. I don't know. I just think that's really interesting. So we've looked at this stone from many different facets and angles. Do you think this special gemstone is cursed? Think on it and DM us or comment on Instagram. Please tell a special friend or family member about the Whispering Gallery so we can share these interesting stories with more friends and listeners and artists. We love researching these stories and the idea of an art lover and artist community who enjoys these stories as much as we do.
We are working on ways for you to support the show and maybe be able to help provide research books or something like that. Thank you so much for your interest as we delve into the mysteries of the art world. If you know of any spooky or haunted art, please DM us on Instagram at Whispering Gallery Podcast. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks with a new episode. Take care.
See you later.
Have you seen the well-to-do up on Lenox Avenue? On that famous thoroughfare with their noses in the air. High hats and collared collars, white spats and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem sits, putting on the Ritz. Bangle gowns upon a bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits, putting on the Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bows. Rubbing elbows, come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last two bits putting on the Ritz. And you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem sits, putting on the Ritz. Bangle gowns upon the bevy of high browns from down the levee, all misfits. And how they're putting on the Ritz. That's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bows. Rubbing elbows, come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last two bits just putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz, Harry Richman, Earl Burntett, and his Los Angeles Biltmore Hotel Orchestra.